Hello, and welcome to What the Tech from Boast AI, where each week we talk with some of the brilliant minds behind new and exciting tech initiatives to learn what it takes to tackle technological uncertainty and eventually change the world. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Connection Point founder and CEO Daryl Hatton onto the show. At Connection Point, Daryl and his team have built the next generation technology powering a suite of digital fundraising platforms that help organizations, businesses, and individuals create a positive impact in the world. Their solutions ease the process of collaborative funding to be more engaging and socially integrated, offering a rare balance of powerful crowdfunding paired with affordability, effortless usability. With all that said, it should go without saying that these are amazing and timely solutions that can be a silver bullet for nonprofits, creators, animal and pet care professionals, and even healthcare providers. But building this innovative solution has called on Daryl's impressive experience within the crowdfunding, tech, and startup communities. He continues to be an active advisor and partner for an array of innovative social funding and commerce initiatives, and I can't wait to pick his brain on what it takes to succeed in today's tech economy. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Daryl.
Oh, Paul, what an intro. Thank you.
Oh, that's amazing. My pleasure, man. Yeah, I know that we just gave a little bit of the resume, but I want to hear from you, Daryl. What is your background? How did you get into the tech space to begin with? What is your beautiful background here and where are you located too?
Yeah, so I'm on the traditional unceded land of the Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, and Musqueam Nations in Vancouver. We've been here, started up the company here, been here for a long time, but originally a prairie boy. Started off in Regina, Saskatchewan. So, the funny thing about the entrepreneurial journey is, like many entrepreneurs, I'm a college dropout, couldn't hack that life, got into industry, tried to push it through hard, had to prove myself along for a long time. I had felt like I had no credentials, but along the way, somehow I've managed to run and start multiple companies. And we ended up taking one public on NASDAQ in December of 1999. And now I've got Connection Point, which is my attempt to help solve some of the funding problems for some of the more important problems in our society.
I love that, Daryl. So you are not alone in that. A lot of the founders we talk to here, they have that unconventional path. They don't necessarily have the college degree or the business background that you would expect for somebody who is literally leading a business or who has that CEO title. But I think that is a strength when you can really pull from your real world experience, your lived experience, but also in your case, where you're working on something that's, the goal is to be impactful. Like you're looking to change the world for the better. And I'd love to learn a little bit about how you got into the fundraising space in particular.
Well, that's a funny thing. So along the way, my son decided, as we were growing up, my son decided he wanted to play lacrosse. And so we ended up going out for a team and they said, hey, we can't actually run a team here because we don't have any more coaches. There's so many boys interested in playing. So if you're going to have a team, you need to coach. And I'm going, I've never seen a game, but sure, I'll help the guy who volunteered, who said he'd do it. I ended up becoming manager of the team, ended up, running it right up to junior here. But along the way, one of the things we needed to do was fundraise and collect the fees from our guys. First off, I posted a practice on Facebook and they all showed up. The only time they all showed up to one practice was once we posted on Facebook. I went, I wonder if I can get them to pay their fees like that. And Fundraiser was born, which is one of the brands under the Connection Point platform. We knew in the right from the beginning that we'd have many, many more applications of this kind of technology. And so we the company is Connection Point, and we have different brands that we go to market with. But that's how it got all started, is I needed to scratch my own itch. I needed to raise money for my own team. And we wondered if we could do it with social media.
That is so okay. So that brings me back to a conversation I was having with a couple of founders yesterday. Alina Guidi from Muse out of Toronto was on, and we got into a long conversation talking about building solutions for yourself because you don't see it out there in the market and driving real value and not just putting tech at the center of what you're doing. Because I know a lot of founders today, they think AI, I want to get in on AI. You want to get in on problem solving. You don't want to just latch onto that horse of AI that's going to take you to an investment round, but then you don't actually have customers down the line because you didn't think about the use cases. So that has been just a recurring theme in these conversations over the past week. Similarly, I was talking with Tarek from Architect Accelerate, and he was saying the same thing. He's like, I needed tools that weren't in the market. So I made myself a technologist. I went out there and I did it. In your case, you found a use case for social media that again, it might seem obvious. Yeah, your guys are going to respond to the Facebook post, but now you can actually apply that to getting the money that you need, to getting your dues. And that has borne out a whole business. So I love those unconventional stories. I'd love to know a little bit about the specific products within Connection Point too. You had mentioned Fundraiser. I know in the intro I had talked about pet and animal care and even healthcare, but could you tell me about the different organizations that you guys support?
Absolutely. So the thing is, we call what Connection Point does a collaborative commerce platform, because it's people working together to solve a funding problem. And we, you know, we specifically say causes, corporations, and consumers working together to solve an important funding problem. What we do is we, with some small, 0.5% or 1% modifications on the platform, can tailor it to different industries. So we have our fundraiser brand, F-U-N-D-R-I-Z-R or Z-R if you're talking Canada. And that's all about funding personal and professional charity. So it's a lot like a GoFundMe platform on steroids. It has a whole bunch more to it. And then it has the professional side of that, that is the, you know, like GoFundMe as a classy brand that's professional in there. And it does very, very well for helping the type of market. We have a crowdfunder brand, which F-U-N-D-R, not E-R. Everybody jokes that I've dropped the E off my keyboard in all of our brand names. And crowdfunder is about the creator economy. So we're helping documentary films or comic book publishers or art projects or music projects or all the floats at Burning Man. A whole bunch of the floats at Burning Man are funded on crowdfunder. And that's, you know, it competes with Kickstarter and Indiegogo on that, but tries to bring a much more collaborative environment to there and a cost-effective one. And we actually do it for free and we make money on it, which is really quite interesting. And then we have a brand called CocoPay. It's about using crowdfunding technology to help people pay for one of the biggest categories that shows up on GoFundMe and on Fundraiser. There was an article this week that GoFundMe has become a healthcare utility in the States because there's a 250,000 people raising money for healthcare at any one point. CocoPay is designed to do that, but to solve some of the problems with that, like making sure the money goes directly to the healthcare clinic and not into the pocket of the patient, because that's risky. And you go, well, why is it risky? Well, they're under threat from credit collectors a lot of time. And they may, the money may be diverted to pay their mortgage or something like that. If you wanted it to pay for their healthcare, there's no certainty of that. So CocoPay is about that. And then, and you mentioned PetFunder. One of the big categories on Fundraiser and GoFundMe is funding pets. So we did a specific brand for that so that we can involve the community more. And that particularly is about getting corporate partners who will sponsor the funding for animals in a shelter. You know, somebody can give and the corporate partner might reward them with free product or product trials or just benefits for the donor to help inspire them to give more to help an animal in a rescue or to help somebody's animal who's been hurt, you know, like car accident or cancer or something like that. And there's all sorts of ways that can work. And then we have about 70 white label partners that use our platform under their own branding for their own markets. And it's anything from fiscal sponsors in the charitable world to, we've got a group that works with just very specialized science projects and things like that. So it's just all over the map. It's really quite interesting.
That's so interesting. And I like that you made a lot of comparisons too. I think that brands that folks know about, but they do have a little bit of concern. I know that I've personally donated to GoFundMes. I won't give too many details, but it was for healthcare and it was for people who I really want to support. I could go on a tangent about the US healthcare system versus what I've seen in Canada, but I will hold that closer to vest. But I've always wondered that too. I'm just like, okay, I know you hear all the time that there are scams on GoFundMe. Again, not to necessarily say that that is a bad avenue. When you need money, that's a great avenue. Crowdfunding is a good source. But what you guys help with, I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, is by bringing that community into it, you're also helping with the validation. And I think also assuaging, I think, fears about people who actually want to contribute. And then on the actual side of the users, the people who are getting the funding, I'd love to learn a little bit more about the unique innovation on that front and just what sets you guys apart from the other options in the market. You definitely spoke to a lot of it, I think, especially about, again, bringing in those complementary community members to really make sure that you're getting that relevance in the funding and the crowdsourcing, but could you speak a little bit to about, if not directly the R&D, a little bit more about that kind of unique take, whether that is per industry or any of it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, even if we just focus on like, you'll get an idea of our mindset when we talk about this. When with CocoaPay, one of the issues was, is there accountability for the money? How will it be spent? And the simplest way to do that is to make sure it gets paid directly in for the to the clinic or to the medical device provider, because we do it for a lot of things like walkers and robotics and things like that for kids. Helping fund that by having the money go directly to those organizations under their own branding. This isn't about us. This is about their relationship as a community. So we've got people that are going for stem cell treatments, or they're doing cancer treatments or things like that. You should be paying attention to the brand that is, you know, first off, it's marketing benefit for those companies. They're getting the money directly into them. And one of the innovations is to take the all or nothing funding model, where we take pledges on the credit cards up until we hit a certain goal, and then we process all the payments. So that if it doesn't work, if you don't reach the amount, nobody's charged anything. So you can reduce a whole bunch of the risks of not getting to the goal that you need by just simply changing the way we process the payments. And then with healthcare campaigns, a lot of people are going, I don't want to let somebody know that I've got testicular cancer. I don't want to let somebody know I got breast cancer. We have privacy controls built in so that you can only share that. You can still use some social media, what we call private or dark social, to share your campaign with friends, but you can even have a campaign page that's password protected. So if you don't want somebody to see, you can really lock it down, and you can only, most people that donate are your first and second degree network connections. So you can kind of constrain the message distribution to just that group. That's way different than anybody in the industry. That's certainly what we think is a leadership position. And then the final bit on that is just, if you imagine that you are a firefighter and you had been clunked on the head and you've got PTSD and you're now looking at using psilocybin or MDMA or some of the advanced medical treatments to treat your PTSD, you might not want your employer to actually know that you're going for psychedelic drug treatment, because they may not understand. It's a very well accepted, very effective treatment option that's, you know, being given regulatory approval, but there's a stigma with it. So you just might want to hide the campaign from them, saying, look, it's none of your business, dude. You know, like, I'm getting myself healthy, I'm getting back to work, but I don't want you to know about my campaign.
Exactly. And you're seeking care that works for you on your terms, and you shouldn't have to form factor that around what your social perception is going to be after the fact. That is really, really powerful. And I think some very, very unique differentiators. I'm thinking back to, I was reading a New Yorker article that was talking about how MDMA and acid, for a better word, back in the 50s, it was actually on the path to being medically accepted. This is a whole other podcast we could go down, but things change in the 60s and 70s with the people who now you probably connotate with psychedelics and drugs like that. But I digress. I think that's an exciting area for innovation.
We can talk about that sometime. I've got a whole bunch of background on knowing that now, because we're tracking it.
Yeah.
But you're right. The Vietnam War and yes. the whole story here changed the narrative around drugs, because people didn't want to sign up and go fight for a fruitless mm-hmm. war. And so they made drugs the villain.
Yeah. But I mean, again, what you guys are helping drive down is individuals and communities too, who they need access to these resources for themselves, for their lives, to live. And you're helping make that pathway without stigmas being attached to it, which I think is great. I think there has to be a lot bigger change here in the States and globally in terms of the healthcare sector generally. But until that happens, I do see this as an awesome way to just make sure that people are connected with the resources they need to get the care that they need. Just one pillar of what you guys are doing.
It's one pillar. And everybody goes, how the heck does that relate to charity? How the heck does that relate mm-hmm. to creator funding and entrepreneurial funding if you're going to do a funding for a product that you're going to launch? Yes. And the answer is that underlying it is all collaborative commerce. We're working on how do we get a community to make payments towards something. So that's an entrepreneurial problem. If you're trying to start up your business, you want a community. You may not have yet done the production run. So this is a very common story on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Yeah. You've got a product you want to do. You get advanced orders for it, typically, and away you go. The difference between what we do and what Kickstarter and Indiegogo does is a little bit like the difference between Shopify and Amazon. So Kickstarter and Indiegogo are like an Amazon. They will have a curated group of customers that they'll bring to your campaign. Not as many as they advertise, by the way, but because the campaign is still responsible for getting most of the consumers that they would have for the product. They bring them together. And as a result, the customer relationship is between the contributor or backer and Kickstarter, not between them and you. We're more like Shopify. We give you the tool set to run the crowdfunding campaigns, even under your own branding, sometimes within your own properties. And your relationship is always directly with the donors or the backers that you're working on. So if you want to run multiple campaigns all simultaneously because you've got a couple of different things on the go, go for it. We're not going to tell you you can't. It's your business, your relationship with your consumer. You need to be ethical and upfront about it. We kind of, you know, there's obviously some things we have to do to make sure that that's happening. But we're trying to empower them with the tools to do the work and build their communities for themselves. And then we're also helping them figure out how to bring that community to them. So there's a whole part of our R&D is how do we get, and you'll love this from the technology point of view, a kind of a federated community of where the different projects will support each other. In the creator market, where you're doing things like comic books, one of the behaviors that we know is that comic book publishers will cross-promote each other. So what we're building into the platform is easy ways for them to extend that and advertise who they're willing to cross-promote. And that's different because we're trying to help empower them to be able to be their own network of collaboration as opposed to owning it all and trying to control it, make rules so that it doesn't damage our relationship with our customer. And it's a different approach. It's hard. It's harder to do. But we've got to get this out in the marketplace because we can't have this centralized control all the time. It's not good for business. If you're on the outs with Kickstarter, you're out, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's no getting back in there. And I'm just going to repeat a few of the terms that really stuck out to me. Again, federated community and collaborative commerce. I just really want the listeners at home to think connection point and think those terms because it is a huge differentiator compared to the Kickstarters, the GoFundMes. And I love that you drew that comparison too between the Shopify and Amazon of it all. I think you explained it better than I could. But you also teed me up for my next line of questioning, which is around entrepreneurs. And I know this whole conversation has been around funding. And I know that you have been in the tech community for a while now. And I'd love to know just what your experience with funding a startup has been to date. Whether that is funding your innovation and your R&D, you are a Boast customer. You have worked with us to help capture your Shred claims. We can go down that path if it's appropriate, but I'd love to know just what is it like funding a startup today and how has that evolved over the course of your career in the startup ecosystem?
Oh, there's such depth to that question and what to handle, but let me tackle a couple parts of it. When I started Connection Point, I had been through the public company and it had been at one point massively successful. The idea that we had was valued at $1 billion Canadian on the market. And, I had 4% of that as an owner of and co-founder. That's what kind of the diluted down level was. Fantastic. Except we couldn't cash it out. So by the time we could cash it out, it was worth zero. And we finally ended up taking the company private again, selling it to our largest competitor in 2008. And I managed to get a little bit of money out of it. So as a fool, I put most of it into starting Connection Point. And in doing that, I had the ability that I could kind of execute a little bit on figuring out this dream of it. But one of the side effects of that was that I invested this nest egg and had, in the first year of operations, we were relying on a bunch of advanced Facebook integrations that they shut off at the end of the year. We launched in July launched in September. And by Christmas, they shut off all the APIs I needed to use because they were trying to control Zynga, which was a gaming company that was kind of destroying the platform. So, the funding road, because I didn't go for kind of VC investment in the beginning, because we weren't exactly sure how this was going to go. And it was hard to communicate It took us quite a while to get the collaborative commerce value proposition story understandable. We had it at an instinctive level, and we were acting on it, but it was really hard to put it into a soundbite that a VC goes, gotcha, okay, I'm going to give you a bunch of money for that. And so we actually took until about 2 years ago to get our first institutional money. We had friends and family and angel investors up to that point. And then we got to that point. So the plan was we were going to take our kind of what was our seed round, believe it or not. And even though we'd already done about $9 million of revenue, and use that and go for about 18 months and then go for our Series A and really see if we could scale it up. And in that time frame, our core philanthropic market took a big hit from the pandemic. You know, they were down 10 to 30%. So we were spending to grow into a market that had a serious headwind. And so the VCs also, you know, kind of shut their wallets as for a while there. And they said, we're not giving our money to anybody unless you're AI. And so we ended up needing to do things like factoring our shred. And it's been a lifesaver because I can now get the quarterly payments on the shred work that we've just recently done. It's helping me keep the team together and continue to operate and grow in a time frame when our source of funding just evaporated on, you know, what we, you know, you learn how to spend a whole lot of money to make the VCs happy. And then you don't have the next round and all of a sudden you're like screwed up.
And the thing is, like, there's no lack of need for the innovation that you're driving when that funding evaporates. You still need to drive that solution. You still need to get that to market. There are still people who need what you're going to be delivering. So you got to get creative sometimes. And I love to that, again, you guys have taken advantage of what Boast does uniquely in that we can help you get that shred funding before your end of year. We actively keep tabs on the progress that you're doing. And we tie it to outcomes so that it is very clear to the CRA how much money you are putting into your innovation. And I think that's the beauty of Shred 2 and R&D tax credits broadly. It's money you're spending. It's money you deserve. And Canada wants you to keep that in your pocket so you can keep spending it. Stretch those dollars further. Plug it back into your R&D. Plug it back into driving unique innovation. And if companies like you guys, again, that are driving meaningful change and really helping connect powerful outcomes with the customers that you are targeting, that is music to our ears. I'm so happy to hear that we can work with customers like you to make that happen. And again, I think more customers in Canada, more founders in Canada, shouldn't underestimate their R&D either. I think that you'd be surprised at how much money you can wring dry out of that. It sounds a little cynical to put it that way and only speak dollars and cents, but that's money that you are investing in a lot of instances, especially if it's shred qualifiable criteria. So
we're investing in building tech talent locally, yeah, and great high quality jobs. And, you know, the side effect is that we're stronger as a company. Mm-hmm. My American friends sometimes look at us and go, unfair advantage, unfair advantage.
Absolutely.
It's unfair advantage.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah. And Daryl, I'm here in Boston, so I'm kind of an outlier on the Boast team in that I'm not up in Vancouver where you guys are right now, but the community and the support up there, not to say we don't have that in Boston. Of course we do. It's a different tech ecosystem down here than it is up there, but the funding and just the government support, it is heads and tails above anything that I think that we have on offer, at least today here in the States. It's an evolving tax landscape, of course, so that could change down the line. But I'm super envious, but also super grateful that I work for a company like Boast that does business up here. And again, I get to talk to amazing founders like you who are doing really cool stuff. And I get to feel like a proxy member of the Vancouver community too, being part of it. So,
W honorary Canadian, come on up.
Absolutely, eh? But yeah, I appreciate it so much, Daryl.
Take care. This is great. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.